MoneyWeb now on the money.
This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
Turning now with Keith McLachlan, Integral Asset Management. A bit of background. David Bowie, I think we can all agree that the greatest musician of all time. And for those who don't agree, you can go hit me up on Twitter. But he released the Bowie Bond in 1997. Essentially, he raised $55 million and investors got the income from his 25 albums that had been produced up to that point. It was a 10-year bond, and it went pear-shaped. Later, he sued Prudential Insurance, the original backers, in 2001 for breach of contract and unjust enrichment. He lost. He had a Moody's rating. It got downgraded to junk status in March 2004. But he's, well, in a back sense, his estate has now sold his catalogue for $250 million. Keith, this is something which, when Bowie did it in the 90s, was weird and wonderful, but the idea of selling musicians' music catalogues has gathering steam, and in fact is investable these days.
Morning, Simon. Absolutely. I mean, in a world of increasing financial sophistication and increasing access to financial markets and instruments, song catalogs, and by the way, the term, just for the listeners' benefit, when we talk about catalogs, they are collections of songs. Mm. They don't necessarily have to be the same artist. They can be vast numbers of artists and individual songs and entire albums, et cetera, et cetera. But investing in catalogs, especially in a world of declining interest rates like we had for the last decade, a couple of years ago, it becomes very attractive because you get to, like, there's been some really good tailwinds in this market and it generates a nice yield.
Yeah, it does generate that yield because, my thought was, I mean, in a sense, they're pandemic proof because during the pandemic, we were all stuck at home and probably streaming more music. And to a degree, again, recession proof because we are spending. And they should, in an ideal world, be fairly nice, fairly unvolatile investment options.
So I wouldn't call them proof anything. What I call them is uncorrelated. Uncorrelated. Important from a portfolio construction perspective, where it's not going to follow necessarily the more normal market cycles. And I go back to that point of right up until a little while ago, we had a decade or two of declining interest rates. So the world was seeking alternative yield. This became very attractive. With each time global interest rates fall further, the steady yield coming out of catalog royalties becomes more attractive. But there's more subtle elements to this as well. Mm-hmm. The industry is somewhat still a growth industry for a range of reasons. And I just want to touch on those. And that's some of the structural reasons that make this attractive. The first one is that for many, many years, there was a long tail of royalties in the market that didn't get collected. You know, you download an MP3 and you play it, and the artist and the owner of the song, those can sometimes be different one people, don't get paid anything. So that effectively the black market in songs was huge. What's happened with the advent of streaming, Spotify and iTunes, it's actually not just made it easier to listen to songs, because the owners of catalogs are dealing with large corporates, mm-hmm. and it's data rich, it's brought that black market back into the main market or the formal market, and you can now earn royalties off it. So that's the first thing, is the royalty streams have grown at a higher than market rate because of streaming. And the second thing is the discovery of songs has changed because of the penetration of streaming, you know, YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, and the like, where in the old days, production studios would blast out distribution onto radio and TV and everything and MTV, and we'd hear the latest pop song shoved down our throats. Now what's happening is algorithms are deciding the songs that we like. And in fact, what we're getting is a second wind in older songs rising up to the top of streaming charts, because we actually don't care what the latest song is. We're interested in songs we like. And that's quite a change. So the older catalogs, and you touched on Bowie, actually becoming more attractive.
Yeah, I mean,
they're good songs. We like them, and we keep listening to them.
In the olden days, I would go and haul out my vinyl or my CD of a Bowie and play it, and I still might do that. But truthfully, I can also now stream it. And of course, they don't earn any royalties further beyond my buying that CD or vinyl. But now, when I stream it, and they don't earn much. I mean, it's fractions of a cent. But it's, you know, that's just me. We look at Spotify, we look at Amazon, we look at Apple and the other big streamers. I mean, there are probably a billion people plus streaming.
Certainly, it's a vast, a large and growing body of the world that's streaming. And it becomes even bigger if you consider that YouTube is effectively streaming.
Oh, well, yeah.
And that's a monster all on its own. So it's a large and growing market. Here's an interesting stat. If you go and have a look at the most streamed songs during the pandemic and hard lockdown periods on Spotify, on iTunes, on YouTube, YouTube less so, because YouTube, there is marketing involved. It's not just pure algorithm. But most of the top stream songs weren't new. They were all old.
It's
changed the value in these catalogs. And then there's something that's also quite subtle, the formalization of this market, where we've got some big, big players with deep pockets. They're working out the value of placements of these songs. So they're putting them into Stranger Things and Netflix. They're putting them into Disney movies and putting them and that elevates the songs into public consciousness. And then you get a knock-on effect where these songs get found on Spotify and iTunes and YouTube and streamed even more.
Yeah.
And
Kate Bush suddenly got all famous again, and I couldn't work out why. And she was in the, some, I think it was the Stranger Things. And there's a Hypnosis song fund on the LSE. Code is song, S-O-N-G, if folks are interested. But I got a quick last question, changing tack with you, Keith. Nice little deal from Santovi yesterday.
Absolutely. So it's a small percentage, about 4% of market cap. Mm-hmm. Glenn Gerber, the CEO, structured it with a back end of what profit warranties on a pretty low multiple. In fact, it's a multiple in line with Santova. But importantly, it opens up a new territory, which is the USA. That is very high barriers to entry, because there's a huge amount of licenses that are involved with having logistics services in the States. And it does so on a low multiple with huge amounts of optionality. I mean, there's already conversations happening elsewhere. There's a lot that can be leveraged out of this deal, but yet they're not betting the house on it. And it's structured, like I said, with a back end of profit warranties. So it's, and if it goes bad, you won't pay for it going bad.
Yeah.
But if it goes well, you'll get a significant amount of upside.
Yeah, those warranties. I like those ideas. I think there are a lot of JSE-listed companies that wish they'd had some profit warranties in place. Keith McLachlan, Integral Asset Management. Appreciate the early morning. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.